Hello and welcome back to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. This next interview has a sort of past as prologue feel to it, and that's cool from a question and answer perspective, but it's not so cool if you fear economic bubbles or if you remember more accurately what happens when those bubbles burst. There's one bejeweled figure who ruled the Federal Reserve before and after not one, but two financially bursted bubbles. Alan Greenspan was chairman of the Fed for the tech bubble and the real estate bubble.
When you see the NASDAQ going up that fast as it was in 1999, or when you see real estate go up as fast as it was going up in 2005, then even if you don't know with certainty that it's a bubble, you ought to act.
That's Sebastian Mallaby. He's the Paul Volcker Senior Fellow for International Economics at the Council of Foreign Relations. He's a financial journalist, Pulitzer Prize finalist twice, and author of the new book, The Man Who Knew, The Life and Times of Alan Greenspan. Here's my chat with Sebastian Mallaby, recorded before the presidential election. You'll hear why that matters in a minute.
I'm Sebastian Mallaby. I'm a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations.
And author of The Man Who Knew, The Life and Times of Alan Greenspan. The Fed policy alone is not enough to drive the economy. Where would Greenspan have been on that then? Or maybe where Greenspan would have landed on that given what's happened since 2008?
I think Greenspan would very much agree with the sentiment that the economy is driven by more than just the Fed. I mean, monetary policy, interest rates, basically shifts demand from the past or the future into the present. You can shift it around like that. You can't create demand forever. And in the end, growth depends on productivity and companies, how people are working, whether they are productive or not. And, you know, the Fed does not control that.
And let's go back to your book, The Man Who Knew. Well, in the book, you explain how Alan Greenspan's political career kind of got him to a certain point. But I'd like to focus, if we could, a little bit on the buildup to the 2008 crash and Greenspan's role in that. You spend a lot of time on that, which is great. Can you help me understand what Greenspan's role was in the buildup to, let's say, the buildup to the Silicon Valley bubble bursting in the late 90s?
Sure. I mean, what happened in the lead up to the tech bubble and the busting of it was basically that there was a global economic crisis. You know, there was the emerging markets in Asia that were going down in 97. In 98, Russia went bankrupt in August. And then long-term capital management, the big tech hedge fund, and by tech I mean financial technology, it went bust in September or October of 1998. And in response to all that turmoil, the Fed cut interest rates to stabilize the markets. And those interest rate cuts wound up creating a huge amount of liquidity, which found its way into stock prices. So I think the last leg up of the technology boom in 1999 was definitely linked to Alan Greenspan's policy of having rather low interest rates.
Okay, and if we go with the past as prologue axiom, what was Greenspan's role leading up to 2008? And then I have a follow-up question that hopefully will help tie that together.
Sure, I mean, I think they are tied together. You know, Greenspan, rather in the same way, confronted a real estate bubble in 2005. And just like in 1999, he did not raise interest rates aggressively enough to take some of that bubble out.
And, of course, bubbles continue to appear and burst. And honestly, this may sound like a very pedestrian question, and I kind of hope it is, because somebody of your stature has got to help us make sense of this. Why are these bubbles not only persistent, but also seem to be so damn surprising every time they come around?
Well, bubbles are difficult to diagnose. I mean, you can see that the market has gone up or down, but what's the right level? Well, to figure that out, you have to do complicated comparisons between, you know, what you expect the earnings to be on a particular stock right out into the future. relative to what you're paying for it today. So you don't know the future. You don't know what the earnings are going to be. You have to make a whole series of estimates. It's difficult to be certain that anything is a bubble. But in my view, you still got to try. Just because something is difficult doesn't mean you give up. And I think when you see the NASDAQ going up that fast as it was in 1999, or when you see real estate go up as fast as it was going up in 2005, then even if you don't know with certainty that it's a bubble, you ought to act, raise interest rates, and try to reduce that craziness.
As the chair of the Federal Reserve, Greenspan and others, of course, have inherited the dual mandate from Congress of keeping inflation at a certain level and the goal of full employment. And I'm wondering how Greenspan's approach to both of those may have played out in the economy.
Well, he managed to juggle those two objectives of full employment and low inflation, you know, more brilliantly than anybody else in the history of the Federal Reserve, because he really delivered low and stable prices during his tenure. So on the inflation side, he was a genius. He also drove the unemployment down below 6%, which was considered the lowest it could go before. So it, you know, it got to the low fives or the high fours by the late 1990s. So he did very well on both counts. What he didn't realize was that while he was getting two things right, a third thing was going wrong, and that was financial bubbles.
I see. And the financial bubbles. Now, let's do the past as prologue game or parlor game again, if we could, because if we look at inflation and jobs under Fed Chair Janet Yellen, we also see that she's focusing on the jobs metrics. There seems to be some room to run there. Inflation seems to be a slow growth economy. Are we still looking at a whack-a-mole with another bubble that we're not seeing just yet?
I think it's possible that we are getting there. I mean, as I said before, it's very hard to be sure, but I think we're approaching the point where there's enough evidence that, you know, real estate prices are back up to roughly where they were in 2006, that credit spreads, by which I mean, you know, the difference between borrowing if you're a risky company versus a not a risky company, that difference has shrunk a lot, which is often a sign of danger. The amount you get paid for lending long-term is not much higher than it is for short-term. These are warning signs about the level of asset prices, and I think it's time that the Fed did pay attention to that, even if inflation is below the target.
We're speaking with Sebastian Mallaby. He's the author of a new book, The Man Who Knew, The Life and Times of Alan Greenspan. He also writes for The Washington Post. And I'd like to pivot a bit to the piece you have called The Dirty Little Secret of Central Banking that was published on the 23rd of August. And you mentioned a hometown favorite of ours, John Williams, the San Francisco Federal Reserve president. And he's looking at a different type of target, the NGDP. Can you, in broad strokes, please help me understand the NGDP approach and whether or not John Williams might be onto something?
I mean, at the moment, the Fed basically tries to get inflation to be close to 2% a year. That's the target. What John Williams is saying is, well, maybe we should think about a different kind of target. Maybe it should be a combination of how much inflation there is and how much economic growth there is. When you add up real economic growth with the inflation, you get the nominal GDP growth, and that's why it's called NGDP targeting. And so, you know, what John Williams is saying is that if you looked at that, that combination of inflation and growth might make the central bank more nimble and also kind of, you know, just better at responding to the swings in economic performance.
How do biographers, in a broad stroke, and you specifically, choose their subject and the release dates? I guess I'm asking, is The Man Who Knew, Your Life and Times of Alan Greenspan, a cautionary tale?
In some ways, it's actually a cautionary tale with respect to the financial crash of 2008 and what I've been saying about the danger of asset prices. It's also an inspirational tale in the sense that we live in a time of the populist revolt against experts and technocrats, economists, they're mostly on the back foot. They're being attacked. And I think Alan Greenspan is an inspirational tale in the sense that he turned economics and being a numbers geek into something that was powerful and cool and sort of respected. He basically united political power with economic excellence. And I think that's a model for today's technocrats to study.
Fair enough. Well, Sebastian Mallaby, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
That was Sebastian Mallaby, journalist, professor, and author of The Man Who Knew, The Life and Times of Alan Greenspan. Now, since Malaby's book was published, we've had an election, and Alan Greenspan himself has publicly said that financial regulations that were put in place after the crash of 2008, yeah, those need to be repealed.
I'd love to see Dodd-Frank disappear. I think it was a disastrous mistake, and that is a key regulatory structure that we're looking at. There's been no change in the fact that when money supply accelerates, after a while, inflation picks up.
That's Greenspan talking with CNBC. Now, remember, with faults and all, Greenspan was, according to Malaby, a genius when it came to containing inflation. Here's Greenspan again, talking inflation under a Trump administration.
But my concern now is actually stagflation. I think we are in a period, because of fiscal reasons, for a sluggish economic growth rate for a while. But superimposed on it are very early signs of a pickup of inflation. That pickup of inflation is going to move profit margins up temporarily, but it's a false dawn.
There are not enough policy certainties in place yet to think stagflation, but the smoke is there with infrastructure programs, deficit spending, and protectionist trade policies. In the short term, that's just smoke on the horizon. Longer term, well, that could be an economic grass fire. And of course, we had Vivek Wadhwa at the top talking about any immigration policy shifts and how they could affect Silicon Valley's highly skilled immigrant workforce. We have links to these and all of our show segments at two places online, kgoradio.com/techonomics and or facebook.com/techonomicsradio. On the Facebook page, we also post a playlist every week of the music we use for this edition and every edition of the show. Now, if you're tired of your music player generating the same old stuff for you, well, let Techonomics curate a short playlist for you instead. Give us a click. The producer and host wrangler of Techonomics is Liana Wilcox. The executive producer is Mike Anthony, and I am said host, Jason Middleton. Please come on back soon and have great weeks, everybody.